Love to see you, friends. Welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. My name is Stephen Gordon. Phil is a little under the weather this week, and I know he'll get back to hosting just as soon as he can, and we wish him well. And I get to talk this week with our good friend and one of our favorite guests, Mr. Thomas Fry. Over the past decade, Thomas Fry has built an enormous following around the world based on his ability to develop accurate visions of the future and describe opportunities ahead. His keynote talks on futurist topics have captivated people ranging from high-level government officials to executives in Fortune 500 companies. It is my pleasure to welcome again Thomas Fry.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Looks like we're gonna take a ride on the driverless vehicles tonight.
This is a fascinating area for me to discuss. Thomas, my day job, I'm actually a personal injury attorney, and so this is the thing that's going to come along and relieve me of my job. But it's not just me, is it?
Yeah, it's going to change lots of things. But you'll be safe because we have flying drones, and there's all kinds of room for personal injuries with drones. So
I guess so. The AI gets strong enough, they probably fly a whole lot better without humans than we are behind the controls. Anyway, yeah. One can hope that we'll have a safer transportation future. But anyway, you have written in futuristspeaker.com this article, 25 Shocking Predictions About the Coming Driverless Car Era. So let's shock our audience. Give us some that you think that would be completely surprising to our audience here.
Yeah, well, I started doing the math on this, and when you start applying numbers to it, then it's kind of such a game changer. See, if you have a car that's picking up people and dropping them off all day long, 24/7, and we don't know exactly what the demand will be in the middle of the night because all of this starts changing, but if your vehicle is operating 24 hours a day, it's entirely possible that the vehicle can put on 1,000 miles in a single day. That means after 10 months that vehicle would have 300,000 miles on it. Does that mean the vehicle is wore out after 300,000 miles? We don't know what the life expectancy of these driverless vehicles will be, but I'm guessing at least some of the early ones, that'll be probably, they'll be ready for the junkyard by then. So having a life expectancy of less than a year is so different than today, where cars, you expect them to last over a decade. But the cars today just don't get used much.
Well, I've never gotten into a taxi that didn't feel like it was well used, right?
right.
And so right. I guess that's what a autonomous car would be like that you summon. It's public transportation. It's constantly on the road, like 20 hours plus a day, right? It would tend to wear out quickly. I guess the good news is that you never get in a car that's all that old, and so you tend to have up to date safety features and entertainment features or whatever. If the cars are constantly having to be replaced.
Yeah, part of that's good because we're going to go through rapid iterations of these vehicles, not quite knowing what consumers want. But as you you stop owning your own vehicle, you stop caring. You care far less about what it looks like on the outside and far more about what you can do on the inside. So therefore, you want cars that are easy to get in and out of because people are getting in and out of them all the time, and they might look a lot boxier than today. You know, as a person riding on airplanes a lot, you know, I don't really care what the outside of the airplane looks like because I really can't see it very often. So I care a lot more about what the inside looks like because that tells me if I'm going to be comfortable or not, if I'm sitting next to this big, giant, fat guy or whatever. So
shoved in between two, in a very small seat or something, or seating more comfortably. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So these also, as we did the math on this, just one autonomous vehicle very likely will replace somewhere right around 30 traditional cars. Since our vehicles are only being used 4% of the day, that means that we just need far fewer cars in total. But it's going to take a long time to transition, to make this transition. I mean, we have 162 million registered vehicles in the United States, and lots of people love their cars. They don't want to give up on them. They want to hang on to them. But over time, owning a car will become a very expensive hobby. Driverless vehicles are going to be so much cheaper to operate and use. You don't have to get a driver's license. You don't have to worry about speeding tickets. You don't have to pay for your insurance. All of those things start to go away.
You don't have to worry about bothersome things like being sober when you get in it.
Well, exactly, yeah. Too. I mean, yeah. We'll probably see cars that are sponsored by Coors and Molson or Jack Daniels driving down the road because, yeah, they might even give free samples while you're in those vehicles.
So. Why not? Why not? The open container laws will go away because who cares, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So doing some more math, we looked at this, and it's a fleet for a population, a city population of 1 million people. It will only take 15,000 cars to displace 50% of peak rush hour traffic. Now, let me say that again, because it's kind of a complicated formula. It only takes 15,000 cars to replace 50% of peak rush hour traffic. That's between 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning. And the rest of the day, it'll be much more than that for a population of 1 million people. So if you live in a city like if Denver has 2 million people, then you just need 30,000 cars. Now, the trick to that, though, is there has to be a lot of artificial intelligence built into all these systems because we have to have the right amount of cars in the right parts of the city at any given moment. So the demand is going to be changing a lot. So there'll be a lot of sloppiness.
It's the ultimate traveling problem, isn't it? to have all these cars everywhere, exactly where they need to be at that moment. And then, of course, it gets a whole lot easier. You're not in peak drive times, right? So.
But, right.
Yeah.
For the most part, dealerships are not going to like these cars because they're mostly going to be all electric vehicles. So a gas-powered car has roughly 2,000 moving parts, and electric vehicles have like 10. And so the maintenance departments start to go away. Yeah.
Well, and if you're moving away from individual ownership, instead of it being these dealerships selling to individual people for relatively large prices, it'll be fleet owners buying in bulk. That'll be a different market completely.
Yeah, and that's going to create a lot of problems for cities. And so as 40% of all sales tax comes from auto sales, and as we move into fleet sales, if there's going to be taxes on fleets, then the car companies are going to get them all licensed in the cheapest possible state. So everybody goes to Wyoming to get their car licensed, and then they drive it all over the rest of the country. So anyway, that's going to create lots of interesting issues that cities have to contend with. But so the cars are very likely going to be electric, and because 86% of the cars on the road today just have one person in them, the fleet owners are going to have lots of influence over how cars are designed, and to save a few extra bucks, they're very likely going to design one-person vehicles. Now, these cars will be very comfortable to ride in. You can be productive playing video games, watching movies, or you can just lay back and sleep, but they'll just be designed for one person. That, I think, is another big game changer because the car size becomes much smaller. I've been thinking about the whole safety side of it, and as you're dealing with lots of car accidents, you understand this, but the metric that I think we should be establishing is the metric of how safe the airline industry is as a safety metric that we need to apply to the auto industry. I think we need to apply that to a lot of things. I think we need to apply that to the gun industry as well. So we need a safety metric like that, that we can aspire to become that safe in the automobile world.
Well, I've had people ask, what do you think about autonomous cars and their ability to be built safely? And my thought is, based on my day job, I think it's quite doable. We're just not that good at driving.
Yeah.
People are too easily distracted. We drive emotional, we drive drunk, we drive tired, and You know, and we can't look in all directions at the same time the way an autonomous car could, or even communicate with other cars the way an autonomous car possibly could.
Well, exactly, so, exactly.
You know, I think it's quite doable to make a car that is safer than even the best driver. I've had this conversation with Phil a number of times. If I have a close call on the highway because I do something stupid, then I may learn a lesson, but my neighbor two houses down didn't learn a lesson. Autonomous cars,
right.
If they have a close call, if an autonomous car has a close call, that lesson can be completely sent throughout the entire network of autonomous cars, right? I mean, the entire
right.
network can learn the lessons and be better.
Yeah.
So they will overtake us in safety quite quickly.
Yeah.
Quite quickly.
Yeah, there's a phenomenon called the Pelsman effect. It's named after Dr. Sam Pelsman. He's a renowned professor of economics at the University of Chicago. He studied auto accidents, and he found that when you introduce more safety features like, you know, seatbelts in the cars, airbags and things like that, the number of fatalities and injuries really didn't drop. And the reason is that people tend to compensate for that safety there. As individuals, we're hardwired to be a certain level of risk-taking, and if that risk goes away, we figure out other ways of compensating for it, which is kind of bizarre. That's just human nature, though.
That is strange, so, isn't it?
Yeah.
We are weird animals. We really are.
Yeah. As we get into this thing, we're going to start seeing so many things that catch us off guard. I mean, the fact that the noise level goes away, mountain towns suddenly become very quiet again. We don't have all this rumbling noise going through these quiet little mountain communities. The sound of a city changes. 10% of retail businesses are going to disappear because they're car-related. Everything from the tire shops, the brake shops, emission testing, oil change places, car washes, gas stations, even the dealerships themselves will start to disappear. A lot of the police departments are dedicating 80% of the policemen work on traffic control. And so how do we manage the police departments? I mean, as we get into a drone world, the drones actually create other kinds of problems that police are going to have to deal with. So what's the right number of people in a police department from here on out?
considerably fewer, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, there's an interesting number. In 2015, New York City brought in $1.9 billion from traffic violations. It's just such a staggering number. There's a whole lot of bad karma in that number. They sucked out that money from a lot of poor people.
And I would just guess that the relationship of communities to their police forces could be improved significantly if, you know, we're all transported around these autonomous vehicles and the specter of getting a ticket is no longer a part of your life. These police officers really are there to protect and serve and not just to lay in wait for me, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, we've created kind of this adversarial relationship between people and the police departments, and I don't think it needs to be that way. All of that can quickly disappear. I think we let a lot of people out of jails as a result of this. The DUI stuff alone puts lots of people in prison. So, but you know, this affects so many other things too. Just like an airport. In the average airport in the United States, 41% of its revenues come from parking and transportation services. All of these things start to disappear. All the limo drivers, the shuttle buses, the parking is a huge amount of that money. And so when you start thinking about giant parking lots at airports, what can those be transformed into in the future? And I always like to put in the suggestion of urban agriculture, but we'll see if that works out.
Well, a whole lot of space for something, isn't it?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Well, what about range? Electric cars have traditionally been limited by range by comparison to a gasoline vehicle that, you know, you can typically get 300, 350 miles out of a tank of gas. Will the range continue to be a problem for electric cars, or do you see that going away?
Well, there's a lot of promising things on the horizon. I mean, Elon Musk is predicting 600-mile range next year for the Tesla cars. getting up to 1,000 miles per charge, 2025, 2027, something in that area. So 1,000 miles on a charge, you know, that's pretty darn good. And it's a battery that Toshiba has just come out with. They said that they can get 200-mile batteries recharged in 6 minutes. Yeah, that right there is such a huge game changer. We'll see what catches on, but that's massive.
What about emergency rooms? If people are not getting hurt on the highway, that's another industry there, right, that would be affected.
Yeah. So right now we have 38,000 deaths a year, 4.4 million injuries. That, if you do the math on that, that works out to right around $500 billion a year that's spent on fixing people, repairing people after car accidents. That's
right.
Such a staggering amount that could, and we would all love to see that go away. But that takes one out of every $6 out of the entire healthcare system. Yeah, that I think is a massive, big change just right there. The amount of stolen vehicles that happen in the world. You're not going to steal a car if it's a driverless car that is owned in a fleet. You know, yeah. I always joke.
With low jacking technology, it'd be pretty hard to do even if you wanted to, right? I mean,
well, exactly.
Probably wouldn't want to. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I joke about is that Hollywood's going to hate this because it just ruins all the chase scenes.
every one of the Hollywood movies from then forward will just be based in the past. It's sort of the cell phone problem too. I mean, that was a big part of movies. Now that people have cell phones, no one's wondering where anyone else is anymore. You know,
it's
hard to write around that sometimes, I think.
Right.
So we see a lot of movies based in the past, perhaps. I don't know. Well, so cities would have to obviously retool how they get their tax money, and police departments would shrink, and you know, parking lots would be turned into other things, you know, maybe some green space that cities need. Obviously, it hits a lot of people where they live. Their jobs would be affected, but ultimately you end up with what I would think would be a much nicer place to live in these cities.
Well, absolutely. I mean, 14% of Los Angeles is currently parking lots. So as our need for parking lots start to disappear, then a lot of this high-priced land suddenly becomes available. And what are we going to use that for? Can we use some of it for parks? I think that'd be great. We need open space, that sort of thing. But as we start having our car drive us around, then we start paying a lot less attention to where we are at any given moment, because we don't have to worry about how to get there. And that currently kind of filters through our mind the whole time. You're looking for landmarks, you're turning at this intersection and that intersection. In the future, location will probably still matter, but it won't matter as much. And so if you have a business that paid for a high-profile location, that probably isn't going to be all that important in the future.
Right. Well, I mean, we already telecommute, but the ability to get around with autonomous cars like this, it just, you know, any place would be good, basically, right? I mean, just location matters less. Does that mean we spread out, or does that mean we congregate in city centers?
It raises some good questions, because intuitively would think, well, that would mean that people can spread out. They can be much farther away. But it may actually work just the opposite. As transportation becomes easier, we start doing more of it. I mean, if I can drive all the way across town in, you know, 20 minutes and just summon a vehicle and jump in and go for it whenever I want to, then I'll probably do it a lot more. And if the price of transportation plummets like I think it will, I've heard everything from 6 cents a mile to 28 cents a mile. And I've actually heard of some models for actually offering free transportation in these driverless vehicles. And they still have a profit motive in the background. We're going to see some interesting shifts in what the amount of money that we spend on transportation in the future.
Well, and overall, transportation costs shrink. But car ownership becomes something that people do really for hobby reasons. It's sort of a rich man's hobby at that point, right?
Right. I just got back from Indianapolis last weekend, and the Indianapolis 500. I keep asking the question of how long before we see the first Indianapolis 500 won by a driverless vehicle.
Yeah.
And so this whole idea that the sound of a vehicle, the rumbling, the noise, the smoke coming out of it, that's the symbol of power that you had, that all the racing industry was kind of based around that. And now you have these electric cars that are beating everybody on the the drag strips, and they make virtually no noise at all. That's such a game changer there.
I wonder if people would want to pay to go see a silent race. To me, part of the
Yeah.
experience, when I've gone to race, stock car or whatever, Formula One or whatever, it's the sound is a big part of the experience. And I
Oh,
just
it is.
wonder if
Yeah.
we might still want to see the gas powered race cars while we travel to and from the racetrack in our silent cars.
We're certainly not going to want to watch all driverless cars compete on the Indianapolis 500. That would
Yeah,
be boring.
we want the personalities.
Absolutely. I mean, that's
Somebody
kind
to
of
race
like
for.
watching. That's kind of like watching two computers play chess against each other. Can you imagine anything more boring?
And right after that, we can watch paint dry, and I'm not sure which would be worse. Yeah, exactly.
You think about how the effect that this has on our businesses, on our houses. As parking lots start to go away, then I've been speculating that I think we start designing what I call queuing stations in front of buildings, so that the driverless vehicles are all queued up, ready to go whenever somebody wants to take off. And as depending on how much traffic is in and out of these can be fairly complicated queuing systems. There, you might have a certain lane for handicapped people, a lane for moms with kids. Maybe you have a Lexus lane for your best customers. But this I think is going to be part of the driverless experience, that you can just come out of a building and jump into a vehicle and take off. And as we stop owning our own vehicles, then suddenly our garages become available to do something else with. And I've been speculating on the idea that we might be converting lots of garages into Airbnb rentals to make a little extra money on the side.
Absolutely. I could see that. Yeah.
That
Why not,
could
right?
be a whole new cottage industry of remodeling garages.
Well, so altogether, though, the impact of driverless technologies calls, according to what you write here, one in four jobs to disappear. So we've touched on a bunch of these. Fewer police officers are needed, and fewer emergency rooms are needed, and fewer people that do what I do for a living are needed. Ambulance
Yeah.
drivers, and I mean, it just goes on and on. I suppose that raises the question, so how do we adapt as a society? We'll have to figure out something else to do, I suppose, those of us who are impacted.
Yeah, I actually think this is a technology, though, that opens the door for lots of other inventive new business models. And so the one we like to joke around with is that it gives rise to a speed dating service where two random people get into a driverless car and actually speed around while they're dating for 5 minutes, and then they get out. So.
If it's a bad date, you just drop and roll. You get out quick. Anyway, I can see that working, and all of this is controlled by an app.
Yeah, so
It'd be Match.com meets Uber. I love it. That's a great idea.
so we played around with this idea of driverless mobile businesses. So the food truck industry that we have today, I think, is paving the way for a much larger industry. When you take drivers out of the equation, I mean, then you can have mobile banks, you can have mobile grocery stores, you can have mobile dog grooming places, hair salons, mobile retail operations. And so the big shift is, away from, a permanent location for a business where you try to get people to come to that business, to the opportunity now where the business can go to the people. That is such a massive fundamental shift in thinking that that creates all kinds of new opportunities that we haven't been acquainted with in the past.
Absolutely. Well, that will have to be it.
Thomas, it's been great talking to you tonight and all week. We've had a great time.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on.
If you missed Monday night's program, that was the Post-Electric World. Until next time, live to see it.